So I'm Derek Smith, as Theora introduced me. I am a public health educator, technically. I work for San Mateo County. If you've ever been in San Francisco's airport, you've been in my county, because that is technically in my county, just south of San Francisco. What I'm talking about today is pretty practical. I'm not going to be presenting specifically research. It's more hands-on interventions that we've had around increasing social justice and health equity through our lens. I mean, the work that I'm paid to do is around tobacco control. It's around chronic disease prevention. But we found a lot of ways, particularly around partnering and bringing everyone to the table to be able to collaborate on tobacco control, but also meet the needs of a variety of community groups. So I'm going to be talking about those and trying to be simple. I usually am a fast talker and I'm speaking as slowly as I can, and we're going to roll through. I've got 9 slides, so I'm going to take it nice and slow as we go through this, just so you have preparation of where we're going. So I did want to mention, acknowledging my boss is named Ida Kabusai, and she's very big into social equity work and has been an amazing inspiration to me. Even though she's not an MSW, she totally gets it. And for me, I had to go that route to get the social work degree to understand people and get the public health degree to understand data. So, but for her, she found it naturally, the importance and power of community. So just want to throw that out. I have nothing to disclose like the others. And also wanted to mention that our funding comes from the state of California, which is very supportive. The tobacco control people in specific have been working for 20 years to build community to address tobacco control. And that's why California's tobacco control movement has been probably one of the most successful public health stories since Jonas Salk and polio and all that. It's been pretty amazing. So 2 disparate thoughts that I want to start us out with as we're talking about health equity. One is something that blows me away, and I'm very embarrassed that I just recently came across Dr. Setra's paper, but just establishing the idea of health equity, and this chart showing you to the side, that essentially it's showing mortality rates. The black triangles are black men, and just below those, the white triangles are white men, and below those are women, are the circles. And showing basically the overall mortality rate. And over a period of a decade, the finding of this Dr. Setra research saying that we know why there are these differences, right? We all know, as particularly in social work, it's health equity issues, it's place, it's income, it's racism, it's opportunity. There's a lot of reasons why black men are dying at a much higher rate than white men. But basically their premise was just saying, if magically black men were dying at the same rate, not that that's like a gold standard for white men, but we'd have 700,000 black men that would still be alive in that decade. So just pointing out very boldly and very clearly that we have huge disparities and that there's a lot of work still to do. And actually, tobacco is a really big part of this, and this is why we're working with African American and other communities that are have a lot of disparities around tobacco. So my premise and the work that we're trying to do really has a lot to do with building something in the community and trying to collaborate between us, the experts, whether it's academia or public health or whatever, in actual people who actually live in the community and maybe don't have all the public health skills, but certainly have a tremendous volume of skills that can help us in our work, and hopefully we can support them. So really looking at people who address social justice, and one of my heroes is Winona LaDuke, who, like a lot of us, was just a person, right? Like, just started out as a human being who saw a problem and then started stumbling around this mining and logging damage on her reservation in Minnesota, and then became this leader who, she was in the Green Party as like a vice presidential candidate, and also has really done a lot for economic development in her community, environmental justice issues, and grew as a leader essentially in the community because she saw a need and she went to fill it. So she's one of the models of kind of what we're trying to build in our communities, really bringing out of people the best so they can help us with health issues. So our premise essentially is that health promotion is really a team sport. That we have to start looking at inequities, we have to name them, we have to use our data to look at what's going on in our community and start providing that extra work, doing that extra work in the hardest hit communities. And for me, in tobacco and chronic disease, we can very easily determine who are those communities that are being left behind. And we really need to engage everyone in our community as best we can, particularly those who you know, when you when you're asking for people to volunteer to help you with a public health campaign, you're going to get the same people. You're going to get do-gooders. You're going to get healthy people. So you have to dig a little deeper, and you have to make connections in sort of a different way. You have to expand. And really, as I said, accessing community expertise and supplementing it, it's really this team thing. And I've learned a great deal in this role about, one, not being the expert, which I'm, you know, not always the expert for sure, but being able to draw out that community expertise so that, you know, we're on maybe level ground when we work with communities, and that we're really acknowledging what we all bring to the table. And then finally, one of the big keys that we use is grant making. So I'm a bit like a grants person, like a program manager and technical assistance, in that we kind of put out like a project we need some help with, and then we provide a lot of support to a community-based agency, give them a little startup money, you know, hold hands as we walk together along the process and try to provide data, technical assistance, but also give them all the tools that they require to complete a project. And I'm going to talk about a couple projects. And as I said, a team sport, I'm so proud of this, which is like, there's one of our local elected officials in the state assembly and an Asian American organization, the Lung Association, our sheriff deputy, and someone from the school district, and myself from the health department. And it's just a whole team that we got together and did a press event around tobacco access issues. And just one example of how we work together collaboratively. So really, I want to talk about five key sort of like findings, keeping this very basic. These are the five walkaway points that it's very important in this sort of partnership to be flexible and frame success from a community perspective, to change pace and modify approach when needed, to build a very broad network whenever possible, be present in the work, and engage community on a lot of different levels. So I'm going to go through five slides, five projects, each one as an exemplary point for any of these take-home messages. So we have a local, very, very, very small organization called Talama for Tongan. San Mateo County is a very large Pacific Islander community, specifically Tongan, also Fijian and Samoan. But we've worked with this organization. It's super grassroots, like very, very small, oftentimes not funded at all voluntary. And we supported them in rolling out their very first policy work ever. They had done some cancer health education project before, but we decided we wanted to work with them on two things. Collecting data to find out what's the smoking rate in the Tongan community, like how many people, there's not any national data even on that. What is our local Tongan smoking rate? We think it's high. Turns out to be like 30% from our sample, which wasn't super scientific, and our county rate's like 10%, so that's pretty bad news. And also they wanted to promote smoke-free venues. So there's lots of Tongan community gatherings, and they want to say, hey, let's make them smoke-free, and let's let everybody know it's for the kids. Smoking's only going to occur outside. So they've never done anything like this, and they need a lot of technical assistance as well as, you know, funding from the health department to make it happen. Ultimately, we created these educational brochures. This one's in Tongan, and we also have an English brochure, but they were very proud of that. So this is where I talk about flexibility. You know, normally we'd want to do all the sampling stuff, and ultimately what we did is collected data through churches, because church networks, the Tongan community's half Catholic, half Mormon. So there were two church groups that we were able to go to and very easily collect data about smoking, how people felt about smoking and secondhand smoke, and if they themselves were smokers. Additionally, we utilize this community leader model, like as a health educator and a social worker. It's all usually about community empowerment and not coming on too strong. And in this community, there was sort of a stark hierarchy. And what they told us was that, you know, we're the leader, and this leader in the community is going to go up to smokers and say, you've got to go outside. And just to be very, very clear about it. So we kind of use the natural model that existed in the community. Additionally, really supporting the organization and learning the value of their data. So not to say anything about professors, but there were some professors that were very interested in getting their hands on this data, because there's not a lot of data on Tongan. You're all excited. I see you all want it. No. Not to accuse you from the podium. I apologize. But they didn't really realize the value of their data, and it was really important to say, you know, this is good for future uses. If you want to write a grant proposal, like, it could be very appealing to have data from the Tongan community, a very underserved community that has a lot of health disparity needs, in just kind of helping them work through, like, a lot of folks who don't work with data just terrified about data and don't want to touch it. So another organization we worked with, Hope Preservation, is an African-American youth empowerment organization locally. And also pretty new to policy work until very recently. Done a lot of education work in the past, but have never delved into, again, you're seeing a kind of a train here that what we do is policy work. It's kind of like a community-based participatory research, but we're a little less concerned about the research. We're now publishing. The idea is to use the data to pass a policy locally, if at all possible. So one thing that they worked on previously was this kind of smoke-free films, local city resolution. And then they recently moved to the issue of mentholated tobacco, which this group really dug their teeth into because there's so much of a history of targeting the African-American community with these mint cigarettes. And there's a lot of research about, you know, kind of health implications at this point. So it's a very hot topic. So in this case, I'm talking about modifying the approach as needed to make sure it kind of makes sense to the community and it fits well with their goals. So one thing we did here is developing a sensible guiding work plan and allowing for it to be customized. So when we put out an RFP, and we're government, and we say, okay, we need you to do a project, and community organizations have no idea how to apply for an RFP if they haven't done that before. So what we start doing is creating, I'm like, hey, this is what I would propose. So we'll release an RFP with like a sample of activities that you could complete, and then we kind of start this negotiation with a contractor, and they say, basically, we could do that. We don't want to do this, and we think this would be a better idea. So we start a negotiation. It's very on the ground, but it's a way to get them up to speed so they have a very evaluable project plan. But we've kind of, and we're meeting our needs as a county, and they're meeting their needs as a contractor. Additionally, setting up regular agency support, because a lot of times these folks are on their own and they don't have a lot of policy knowledge. So just making sure, like, I'm an extra team member that they can rely on having a meeting with regularly. And then assisting youth and community members to recognize and use their power. So one thing is that these young women that you see here went and spoke to our county board of supervisors. No small task. I mean, it's a county of 700,000 people, so it's not, these are not like podunk little elected officials. So they were a little scared to go up there, but then they realized youth, when they go and present in front of elected officials, their eyes get bright afterward, and you see that, you see you've unleashed something that they someday will be elected to that board, and it makes you pretty excited because they've become engaged in the process. And additionally, the leader of the group is now a member of this statewide African-American tobacco kind of health disparity network, which is really great, and I'm very excited for her and glad to have been a part of collaborating. So we have another agency, Youth Leadership Institute, which has tons of national expertise in youth advocacy, and they've worked with us for a long time, and they teach me many, many things, but particularly about acknowledging youth and using the words youth and not seeing kids and not seeing children and recognizing that we were all youth at one time and we hated being called kids and the low expectations that were made of us. But recently we worked with them to address smoke-free housing in our migrant labor community. And this is one area where really the take-home is building a web of connections. We integrated the issue into top community priorities like housing quality, which is a really big issue. Some of this is really deplorable housing. Engaging a lot of partners from all different sectors, and really using existing networks. So these young people wanted to do public opinion surveys about what's the deal with smoking? Have you ever experienced a problem? They went door to door, and they also came up with this great novel idea. A lot of these folks were going to food distribution sites, so they would wait in line to get a bag of food once a week. And they're just waiting in line, so it was a perfect opportunity for these young people to come up and say, hey, I've got a survey, it'll only take 5 minutes. So it was a very novel way to continue making more connections in the community and let them know about the work they were doing. You're really supporting non-traditional leaders. This young man, Jose, is like one of our superstars because he comes from a family. The parents just speak Spanish, and they are, they struggle. They're very, very working class, and he's now won 2 different scholarships for youth leadership, so he's clearly going to college. Like, there's this new expectation that he's on the way, and I know someday he'll be on our city council or board of supervisors or something. So we'll talk about that a little at the end. So Commission on Disabilities, this is sort of a lightweight project. We're really just building a partnership with these folks. And the take home here is just to be present. We just keep showing up at events to say, you know, tobacco and disabilities are related, and we're here to support you, and in the future, somehow money will come across our desk, and we will find a way to do some sort of a project around disabilities and how tobacco leads to disabilities and how housing should be smoke-free and accessible for folks with disabilities, trying to link those two partnerships. And then finally, the last project essentially that I want to talk about is behavioral health and recovery services. This is our mental health and substance abuse system in the county. And we are developing a tailored cessation program to help people quit smoking. I'm sure you all know that people who are mental health consumers and substance abuse users smoke at extremely high rates. These are the folks that are still smoking in my county. And so we are really trying to work with the consumer community, building more trainings for clinicians and for consumers. I'm trying to do a peer-to-peer cessation model and do a lot of social marketing around quitting. So really, our concept here is engaging every member of the community in some way. We've conducted presentations to lots of consumer groups. We've done focus groups. There's actually a poster right now in the hall that I'm supposed to be standing at, that my colleague's standing at, on our consumer focus groups. So I'll send it to you if anyone's interested in the future. We've also gone to our local NAMI meetings, we talked to family members and parents, talked to clinicians, and tried to get everyone's take on what are the barriers and how are we going to move forward to become smoke-free, as a community. Also developing this, you can see this concept paper on the side about that we worked with our Office of Consumer and Family Affairs very closely to develop a plan to go smoke-free. And then additionally, we are developing materials and trying to ask a lot of people for feedback. So one of the take-homes really is engage people, engage people, engage people. It turns out everyone has an opinion about something that sort of has to do with them. So if you talk to clinicians, they give feedback. If you talk to consumers, they also have feedback. So essentially, in conclusion, there's so much that we can learn from the knowledge of the communities that we work with and even from the process of collaborating. So this is, I know it's a bit of a whirlwind tour. Welcome to my life. These are a few of the projects that we're working on. They're all tobacco related, very different projects and very different people. But really, as I said, it's collecting data and getting communities involved in the data process as well as the policy process. The end goal isn't just creating a written paper or something, which I know is very important. I try to stay on top of the research process, but then getting to a spot where people have engaged in their local community and they've changed something, even if it's a small thing, and they realize that, there's a future and they have an agency and a way to speak up at city council meetings. We've unleashed many city council meeting regulars actually through our process, which is, I think, really great. I mean, everyone should go to their city council meeting whenever they can. Really, it's important to remember that some of us bring public health training, some bring community perspective, and they really do work very well together. And then finally, I talked about Jose, who's a young man from Youth Leadership Institute. This is sort of purposeful because my boss is always looking for the next generation of public health and social work experts and leaders. But what we're doing is kind of creating a diversification of the public health workforce in that we're getting people engaged who maybe weren't previously because we're putting a spotlight on an issue that maybe matters to a community that may be underserved. And all of a sudden we've got these young people or we've got these community members from the Tongan community or African American or other communities that are getting it, that they have agency, their data is their own, and that they're able to kind of carry that forward. And I'm really hopeful. I always love the idea of working with youth and that I don't want to be doing this forever. And it's so great. I'm sure you're all the same way. It's really great to think somebody's coming up to take your place and you don't have to stick around forever and they'll probably do better than you did. So I believe that's everything.